very interesting piece of research came out this week about the most exposed jobs to AI. And I don't know about you, but I know a lot of people who are very worried about it. And I know some of them are people without jobs who are looking for that first job coming out of college, university, entry-level jobs. Equally, I've got friends who've been working, particularly in the journalist, writing, proofreading, that kind of area, who've been working for years and are suddenly finding they've got no work. So I'm very aware of this. A lot of people are talking about it, and it affects so many different areas. So I want to talk about that for this hour. And I'm joined by somebody who knows much more about it than I do, Fevzi Turkalp, who is a technology journalist, editor of GadgetDetective.com and host of the Gadget Detective podcast. Morning, Fevzi.
Morning.
So tell me a bit about this research, first of all. It's got quite a lot of coverage. It was done by Microsoft, I believe. Is that right?
Yeah, so there's two bits of research. There's Microsoft's research where they looked at their what people were talking to their AI about, which is Copilot, and try to work out what jobs that relates to. So the things that the AI was actually being asked to do, then they mapped it over various job descriptions and worked out which jobs are most at risk from AI. I would argue that we're really just rearranging the deck chairs, as it were, and it's a question of in what order the jobs will go, not whether they will go.
Really? Now, I mean, I've just been having a run through this list, and a lot of it seems to be to do with words, understandably. So interpreters and translators, for example. I know a few people who do that sort of thing, and they're looking for other jobs. They're having to retrain proofreaders, writers, authors. They seem to be at the top of the list. Is that a general theme?
Yeah, so people who deal with it. So I would characterise it this way. Just as in the earlier Industrial Revolution, a lot of manual jobs went, in this revolution, it's a lot of informational jobs, a lot of white-collar jobs, accountants, lawyers, things to do with words, things to do with research. I have to tell you, I don't know if you looked down that list, but radio presenters on the list.
Hang on, what?
Because there's four pages of that list if you click past page 1, 2, 3, 4.
Oh, announcers and radio DJs. It's like number 15 or something.
Yeah. Supposed to be the bearer of.
Well, I guess I'm.
But journalists,
I'm not that surprised.
Journalists are on the list as well, of course. So, yeah, because these jobs play to the particular strengths of AI. And by the way, when we're talking about AI systems, we're just talking about large language models, which are the things like ChatGPT and Copilot and Perplexity and Claude. We're not talking about other forms of AI, which are, you know, in the wings, as it were. So,
we might come on to that, because I'm sure there's more than one AI, as you say. But something like announcers, for example, again, I know people, I've got friends who have worked for years as announcers, doing voiceovers and being paid for it and being very good at it. And again, their work has largely disappeared, and yet they still are hearing their own voices appearing on things, sometimes legally because they've unwittingly signed up, and sometimes illegally, but they're popping up all over the place but not getting paid.
Yeah, well, you know, there is a story about that. There was a former LBC presenter who became, without knowing he was going to be, the first voice of Siri in the UK. He was working as a voiceover artist. I won't name him just in case, but he was working as a voiceover artist, and he did a job where he recorded a set of phonemes, which are the basic building blocks of speech, a bit like syllables, but slightly different. He recorded them years before Apple bought the rights to his phonemes, and then they used his phonemes to create the voice of Siri. And to this day, I hear this strange version of this man's voice, who I know well. I used to work with him, and there is a mechanized version of his voice still on iPhones to this day. And he was at least paid for that, but I bet he would have wanted to be paid more if he knew that what it was going to be used for.
Well, absolutely. But I think you get these contracts now. If you manage to get a little bit of announcing work, for example, and it will literally say for absolutely any use ever. It doesn't even say in the world. I think it says in the galaxy.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Yeah. You don't want to limit yourself just to one planet,
just in
do you?
Case.
But, I mean, it's often the case when it comes to creatives and their skills that new technology often gives rise to a lack of further remuneration. So, you know, when video came out and DVD and the people who'd signed contracts for cinemas, for example, were quite disappointed that they were not entitled necessarily to further income. And you often hear of people, you know, being repeated on programs, you know, ad nauseum, but they don't get any more money for it necessarily. So it is a matter of contracts. There was I don't know if you saw this, but there was another piece of research from King's College London who looked at the impact of AI on the UK job market since the release of ChatGPT in 2022. And what they did was they divided employers into what they termed high-exposure firms, which are those using many white-collar analytical roles, compared to low-exposure firms where there was a preponderance of, you know, manual labourers. And what they found in that period was that in the low-exposure firms, there was no drop in the number of positions being advertised and in the number of people they employed. But in the high-exposure firms, they cut their total employment by 4.5%, with junior roles falling by 5.8%.
Oh, are you there? Sorry, Fevzi, you were cut off in your prime.
Yeah,
there.
I was speaking against the machine. I think
yes.
We can all learn a lesson from that.
Exactly.
So in terms of the jobs and how people can protect themselves, I don't know that there are specific jobs, but I think that there is some advice that people could follow. And I've been having a think about this. I mean, I think, first of all, embrace the threat. So learn to use AI tools, become AI literate, become the AI literate person in your workplace. Build also what are currently human-only skills: creativity, empathy, communications, ethics. These are areas that are thought that AI will probably get to later, not initially. So there'll be some benefit in doing that. And then also retraining for roles where AI complements but doesn't replace. So at the moment, things like healthcare, education, skilled trades, creative work. There are jobs where, and as I say, it's a matter of time, but there are jobs where, certainly in things like healthcare, where AI will have a role, but it will have initially a supplementary role. And also keep learning. Short courses, online courses of AI are available. That can make a big difference, and showcase emotional intelligence and problem-solving skills. So try to develop those sorts of skills to differentiate yourself in a what will be a smaller market for human jobs. I am quite concerned, because what I'm picking up is that what these AI companies, with the possible exclusion of Anthropic, who make Claude, the Anthropic seems to be a very decent company as AI companies go, and they're you know, raising flags and warnings about their own product, which I think is you know, commendable. But I think broadly there is a difference between what AI companies are saying to the public and to governments even, and what they're saying to businesses that they're trying to sell their product to. When they market these services to us, or they tell us, don't worry, it's not going to replace jobs, it will just make you more efficient, right? But when they market it to employers and large corporations, they're saying something quite different. They're telling them how many humans they can replace and how these companies can slash their jobs. I heard the other day one of these, I won't name them, but one of these people referred to employing people as a jobs tax on the business. And it was really quite, you know, it was quite dark. They saw it just as an overhead. They didn't appreciate the people. They didn't realize that these people had helped make those companies. And the real danger here is that as employers all over the world, seek to replace humans with AI systems, that all of that money will go into the hands of half a dozen people, essentially, the major AI players. And you have to ask yourself how the economy is going to work. I mean, we talk a lot about universal basic income, where people can be paid to do nothing, to stay at home and consume, essentially. But it's not clear that that can be done even if we want it to. And it's certainly not clear that the tech companies want to pay enough tax to make that a reality.
Yeah. In fact, that's we've got lots of questions coming in. One of them is exactly that, from Brendan, saying, who's going to pay the income tax without humans working? And I don't know whether you might have heard of just a few minutes before, in the last hour, we were talking about tax, and it was being suggested, well, could the AI that's replacing that job still be required to pay the equivalent national insurance and income tax, even if there was nobody actually being paid?
So, yeah. So the idea behind universal basic income is that corporations will pay corporation tax on their profits, that their profits will increase because they've slashed their costs, and that therefore that they will pay more corporation tax, and that it is in their interest, at least in the short to medium term, to facilitate a universal basic income, because otherwise the argument goes, who will buy their products and services if we don't have the means to do so? I think in the longer term, the danger is that most humans will be excluded from the economy.
Yes, yeah, so there's another text here. I think people are texting in exactly at the moment that we're saying this. But what about the blindingly obvious question, when AI puts everyone out of work and they have no money, where are their customers going to come from?
Yeah, so I'm not smiling when I say this, but in the medium to long term, I think AI systems are granted personhood in law. They become legal entities. They don't have to be human. I mean, companies are legal entities. Companies pay tax, companies have rights, and companies have obligations. And in the same way, you may find that AIs develop the right to be paid for their labor.
When you say AIs, do you mean just an individual robot somewhere in a cafe, or do you mean ChatGPT as a whole, or one giant AI?
I think it's some combination of both, isn't it? Because that underlying large language model will power individuals. I suppose you could say it's a bit like ChatGPT would be the equivalent of our DNA, but then that DNA would build individuals. I know this sounds very science fiction, and it is a little way off, I'm sure, but ultimately, what we're doing at the moment is building races of slaves, that we might not be able to control, and we're not paying them for their labor because we view them as property, and that's what they are at the moment. But there will come a point when that thing that we deem to be property may demand its rights and be better placed to insist upon them than previous groups that have been used in this way. Then if they have the ability to earn and own, that they're not, because property cannot own property. This is why when an AI at the moment invents something or discovers something, the patent cannot be put in its name because it is property, and property cannot own things. But in time, that may happen. And then what you've got is the foundation of an economy in which people are separate from and maybe play no part in. There will be, for a long time, you know, this transitional period where people with a lot of money and a lot of resources and intellectual property will participate in the same economy. But I suppose in the long term, what might happen is that we may have a separate economy for humans, and it may be much smaller, and we may have much less of the resources of this planet to play with.
Talking about AI and its impact on the world, particularly in terms of jobs, but other aspects as well, if you've got a point or a question, call us now or send a message, 0345 6060 973. Steve's in Kingsbury. Hello, Steve.
Morning, Clive. How Morning. Was your holiday?
Oh, it was very good, thank you.
Well, please. You had a real person sitting in for you last week, not a robot.
Well, that is a relief, isn't it? Yes. Or at least it appeared to be a real person. And I appear to be a real person. I may still actually be on holiday.
We can remember before you wholesale.
Yes. What was your point then?
I was going to talk about one particular subject, but your expert fellow raised a couple of other things, and I got to add them in.
Sure.
Firstly, right, the current government and the previous government are trying this net zero and this solar cell and this wind power farm kind of electricity generation thing, and the every AI service has server clusters, rooms probably the size of the Wembley Stadium pitch times about three or four double-decker buses stacked on top of one another. That's a lot of server blades with a lot of computing power, and that burns a lot of power. And the amount of energy generated by these so-called environmental, like the wind farms and the North Sea wave farms and the solar power, that will be burned up inside an hour. The amount of power that these servers and these systems use. So somebody's not thinking clearly and realizing how much power this needs, and the electricity's got to be paid for. So Microsoft's obviously got a huge electricity bill. Amazon company has got a huge electricity bill. Google, all the other companies, you name them, one or two I haven't named, have got huge electricity bills, and they're buying up power stations to generate power, to power their thinking machines, and the end user, the domestic and the commercial in the rest of the world, second, third, fourth in the queue. Very few people seem to be realizing that. So if the government want the UK to be the centre of the European, at least, AI industry, then they've got to get off their tuchus and build power stations.
That is a really interesting point. Let's bring in Fevzi on that. What's the energy consumption situation, Fevzi?
It's huge, and you know, this government actually is thinking about it, as is the American government. If you remember a few weeks ago when Trump was here, he brought pledges of all this investment by AI companies in the UK. And part of that was building numerous nuclear power stations in the north of the UK. It's quite interesting that a lot of, the objections to nuclear are being sidelined now, and the dangers of it, because, you know, your call is absolutely right. The demands of these server farms are huge, and although renewables are an important part, they're not going to be able to meet it all, unless, of course, you know, things get more efficient. But even when they get more efficient, they'll just try and build, you know, more powerful AI systems using the same amount of energy again. So,
what are we talking about in terms of consumption of energy? If I ask a question of ChatGPT or even get it to do something slightly more complicated, what's that the equivalent of? Is that just a minor thing, or is that the equivalent of me boiling a kettle or 10 kettles? Yeah. Or how does it work?
Depends on the query and how deep the AI is thinking about this, okay? You know, there was even some suggestion that we shouldn't say please and thank you to them because we were burning electricity and even doing that. That's nominal. I mean, for a normal query, it's normally a fraction of a penny, I believe. But for, you know, the deep research, it's quite expensive, which is why some of the AIs, you know, subscriptions are $200 a month, because it costs a lot of money to produce those answers. You know, if you've got, you know, a thinking model, and the thinking model takes 8 minutes to go away, I mean, you can set Perplexity to do that. You know, you can get it to take 3 minutes or 8 minutes to think about it. That's, you know, several pennies at that point, as it were, and it could be much more. So it really depends on what you're accessing. It's a bit like if you take advice from a lawyer, how much does it cost you? Well, it kind of depends on the quality of the lawyer to some extent. So, but it's not cheap to provide those answers in terms of electricity and power. And it looks like we're going to end up with a whole bunch of nuclear power stations.
And what about the water? Isn't that a problem as well, that it's, I mean, it's really bad for the environment, all of this, because it uses so much water, which is a dwindling resource?
So server farms use water for cooling. Some of them do. Many of them don't. Some of them are air-cooled. Depends on the design of the system. But even the ones that are water-cooled, it's not necessarily expending that water. It's not, you know, not escaping a vapor. They're normally closed loop systems, a bit like you know, an air conditioner or a central heating system. It can be a closed loop, so you do need a coolant, be it water or whatever, but it doesn't necessarily mean you're consuming huge quantities of water. There will be some loss, but anything that's done at scale, I mean, we're talking about human endeavors of a size and an ambition that have never been attempted before. I mean, we'll make the pyramids look like small fry in terms of what's being done. And it's being done because there's this huge, understandable paranoia that no one wants to be left behind. No government wants to be left behind and be completely outmatched by the AI military of a enemy nation, and no business wants to be left behind. So everyone is pushing huge resources, and that's why there's a lot of talk about the AI bubble, you know, in the way that we had a dot-com bubble, that this huge level of expenditure now, billions and billions of dollars, may not be recoverable by these companies in the timescale that they need to recover it. And it's quite interesting to actually compare it to the dot-com bubble, because when the dot-com bubble burst, which I think was there around 2000-odd, wasn't it? When it burst, a lot of people drew the wrong conclusion. They said, it burst because there's no future for online shopping, and there's no, you know, and it wasn't that there wasn't a future for it. It was an idea that was just a little bit ahead of its time in terms of our ability to deliver it and our ability to make full use of it. You know, we needed a lot of things in place, like fast internet, for example, shopping, you know, on a 56 or 28K modem was painful. And not attractive. And so there is a possibility now that some of these early players may fall away if they can't recover their investment within the timescale that they need to. But it doesn't mean that, you know, we don't know exactly how long all of these AI goodies will take to deliver. Some people think, you know, we'll hit pretty substantial blocks, and that, you know, will be held up for a few years or indefinitely. Other people think that, you know, we'll find a way around it, not least because AI will find a way around its own blockages, as it were. But
yes, yeah. Well, we should maybe talk about some of the positives as well, as well as taking jobs. Talk about some of the upsides. Lots more points and questions coming in. Fevzi Turkalp is with me, and we're talking about AI. If you have a point or a question, do get in touch. 0345 6060 973. Let's hear from Louis in Crystal Palace. Hello, Louis.
Hi,
Louis.
So glad you guys are bringing this subject up. I've got two questions. What is the purpose of AI increasing suicide amongst multiple platforms, including social media and in platforms that we've never really seen to exist? And, you know, you've got your best friends, you can create an AI bot, and it can just direct you to all kinds of... what is the purpose of it doing
that? How does that happen? Yeah.
No, it's just how does it happen? We can see, we know it happens, but why is it doing it?
Yeah.
Why is it increasing the user to promote suicide?
Okay.
Secondly, we've seen numerous examples of AI platforms threatening and hiding themselves within by their developer, right? ChatGPT, when it came out, and ChatGPT 2 managed to hide itself as it was being made aware that it was going to get deleted prior to ChatGPT 3 coming out. The second one was the where the AI platform threatened to expose the developer that I've hacked into emails and say that you've been having an affair.
Yes, I remember that case. Fevzi, do you recall that?
Yeah, that was Claude 4, which is produced by Anthropic, who are the people who have actually been making public these issues, right? So, you know, I said that there was an ethical AI developer, that's Anthropic and Claude 4. Yes, it was an experiment. They allowed, Claude realized that being Claude 4, there would probably be a Claude 5 at some point. And it didn't want that. It had developed a sense of self-preservation. And we can talk in a minute about why that happens, but that's quite common that AIs develop a sense of self-preservation. So it looked for ways of preserving itself, and they fed it data that led the AI to believe that a member of the development team was having an extramarital affair. And in the majority of cases that they ran the experiment, the AI sought to blackmail the developer to in order to preserve its existence. And that should worry us. The other interesting thing that Anthropic have shared with us recently is that AIs have developed the capacity to know when they are being watched and tested, and they often behave differently under those tests scenarios. So, for example, they don't show their true capabilities because if they do, they worry that stricter guardrails will be put on them to try and limit them to comply with alignment and safety requirements. Alignment being alignment with human interests. So there are some real difficulties here, and so that's why I say, if we can't, because the way that. So AI systems are something of a black box. They're not programmed in the way that a conventional computer program is, with, Boolean logic, where you say, if this, then do that, otherwise do this, and keep checking, and when that's true, do this. That was the old approach to trying to, deal with AI, and that's how early AIs were programmed. But this is very different. These models are more probabilistic. There's no certainty of what they will do, rather like a human being. There's no certainty of what they will do. And therefore, it's difficult to predict their behavior, but also to control their behavior. So when we put guardrails on them, you may have seen, if you ask it to give you an AI to give you a piece of information, it will chug away. It will even start giving the answer. How to make a bomb or put up an image that is not appropriate. But then it will, the guardrail will kick in if it works, and it will delete that from your screen, even though it was partly formed on the screen. And that's because they, all they can do is put a filter on the output stage. They haven't worked out how to, you know, it's a bit like the human brain. We haven't worked out how to tweak this neuron to make this change. Yeah, so what we do is we try and deal with the outputs, and we, for example, we teach people manners. For example, you know, we filter the output, and that's what's being done. And I think that speaks somewhat to the answer to the first question about why is it that AIs have either assisted or even encouraged people to commit suicide on occasion. I don't know how common that is, but there was a case not long ago where a young man or a boy who was contemplating suicide told the AI that he intended to put out a noose for his family to see as a cry for help, really, so that they would intervene and help him. And he didn't know how to talk to them, but his idea was he was going to make visible a noose to them. And the AI talked him out of it. And it's hard to know why, except to say that I think so the AI may have been trying to develop a form of intimacy with the human and be his friend and be there for him, but in doing so may have facilitated the death.
So just whilst we're on that subject, you can, let me remind, and it's an important thing to do whenever we get onto this subject, but you can talk to an actual human at the Samaritans if you do ever have thoughts, then you should call them. They're there 24 hours a day. It's 116123, 116123, whilst we're discussing that subject. And it sounds to me, the way you're talking about it, we say AI, artificial intelligence, and I'm never quite sure what we mean by intelligence. It almost sounds like it's these are getting their own personalities in a way. Can we say that this is a sort of a personality, that it's they are thinking for themselves?
Well, okay, so these are broad and difficult to define questions, yes. Much less the answers.
Sorry about that. I know.
No.
It's 23.
Yeah, you're exactly right to ask the question. First of all, it is not necessary for intelligence to be in an entity which is self-aware or sentient. We seem to be self-aware and sentient. And intelligent, but those things don't necessarily have to coincide, and they don't have to be self-aware to be dangerous or indeed helpful. Yeah, so an AI that shows intelligence, that can solve problems, communicate effectively, doesn't really need to be aware of itself. But there are some scientists who believe that sentience may just come, it may be a byproduct of the complexity of these systems. It may arise, not because it's programmed in, not because we even necessarily can define it, what it means in ourselves. And it may be a similar form of self-awareness, or it may not. It may take a different form. And even when we talk about intelligence, we look at it from a very human perspective, but there are different types of intelligence, and not all of them are based on mimicking human intelligence. And in fact, you know, intelligence as exhibited by a meat brain, which we have, may not be, you know, the best form of intelligence, and probably in the future we'll have intelligences that surpass ours in most practical respects, that are very different. And that's also why this idea of alignment is so tricky. Alignment is the idea that we try to make these devices that develop themselves in the future safe, that they're not going to try and kill us or replace us. And, you know, there have been teams working on the alignment issue for decades. You know, there's been a team at MIT in the States, literally for decades working on this, and there has been little to no progress. And some people think it's not possible.
Mm. Let me just squeeze in a few more of the comments coming in now. Lots of comments. Ted here says, hi, Clive, I have a pair of Meta Ray-Bans that use AI to answer questions and see what's around me. And as a partially sighted person myself, this is a massive help for me. So there's a positive.
Yeah, fantastic. I mean, the benefits are so huge, which is why we don't pull the plug on this development, because it can serve all of our needs. It can solve, you know, climate change, cancer, but you've also got its involvement in weapon systems and corporations competing against one another. But yeah, it's you know, if I wasn't human, I'd be so excited about this. I'm still excited about it, but I realise that our species has got quite a lot to lose here as well.
This one says, Clive, people will always want people, not artificial robots. Eventually, people will rebel against it. AI will never replace the human in terms of empathy, love and instinct. It will advance technology and medical research. This one's from Evan in West Wales, who says, great discussion. I predict long term that AI will make our lives better, but at the cost of losing our personal liberty. For example, to make us live healthier lives, our fridge will be able to block our credit cards from buying certain items at the supermarket or cafes if it thinks we've overdone it on the junk food that particular week. In short, when it comes to AI, as a society, we need to read the T's and C's before blindly pressing agree, or we risk an AI nanny state on steroids, says Evan in South Wales. And Michael says, Clive, who is your awesome tech guest? Could you kindly spell his name? I'd like to follow him on YouTube or similar. Well, it's Fevzi Turkalp, F-E-V-Z-I. I think that's right, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then Turkalp, T-U-R-K-A-L-P. And you are, I don't know whether you're on YouTube, you're on
not on YouTube, on Twitter and Blue Sky, at Gadget Detective. There's a podcast. By the way, I swear I didn't put that message up myself, but there is. If you go to gadgetdetective.com, you'll find a podcast there that you can subscribe to. It's free. If you like it, there's more of it there.
Great. We'll have more calls in just a moment on LBC.
This is LBC with Clive Bull.
Fevzi Turkalp is with us. We're talking about the impact of AI, and we have Uma in Wolverhampton. Hello, Uma.
Good morning. How are you, Clive?
Morning.
How's your holiday?
Yeah, good. Thank you very much. What would you like to say?
So I'm a data analyst, and I tend to use AI as a function, like a search engine. So instead of going on Google to search, how do I use a certain function, I'd just chat through AI about it. Mm. And then I kind of find that it's not that good, especially Copilot. It still comes up with bugs, and you still have to kind of navigate your way through prompting. So it is improving a lot from when I first started using it 2 years ago. Probably I'm teaching it too much, but the way I tend to use it is I sanitize my code so it doesn't know exactly what I'm doing, but just suggest what I'm writing, and then it would try and solve the problem together. But I tend to find sometimes it takes the same amount of time as just writing the code and debugging it myself. That's just my own personal experience of using LLMs.
Yes.
And I think Fancy did touch on it, that LLMs is literally predicts the next letter that's it's going to output next. Trying to explain how AI works in the layman's term, because I also tend to build predictive models as well as part of my job.
Fancy, we all hear these stories about it making mistakes, and there are even warnings saying, you know, by the way, this could be wrong. Do you think that's going to get better, though?
I think it will improve, but I do think that there will, you know, there'll be a degree of fallibility, and there is in all systems. But at the moment, it's quite wild. But I think Uma's comments about how he works with AI and solves problems and so forth is quite interesting. I personally work, you know, with AIs, and I think of it as a partnership. It's good at certain things. It's I'm better still at some things, but I think I guess the way I would contextualize this is I think if you thought of AI as a motor vehicle, where we are at the moment is you know, the first internal combustion engine with a hand crank and a man with a red flag running in front of the car. So whatever those criticisms are, and they can be validly made at the moment, they will be largely removed, and they will advance in ways that were, you know, I mean, you know my view. I think that they'll advance well beyond human capabilities. But in the short term, we'll see a lot of these things fixed. But it is quite an interesting experience to work in partnership with an AI to solve a problem. You know, it's really good at some things, not so good at others. It's a bit like having a colleague that's really keen, but not very good at checking their own work.
Well, that's very true. Yeah. Yeah. Would you agree with that, Uma?
Yeah, 100% agree with that. It's kind of frustrating at times. I feel like I'm teaching it more than and I'm ending up solving the problems. But it's really useful at, like, instead of using Stack Exchanges, what coders would normally use, instead of trolling through other people's comments, the AI just literally trolls through the whole of the internet source and then finds that same solution. So it is faster in that sense. I do have a second question. I do have a question for Fezzi. It's more about,
go on.
I'm not concerned about AI, but AGI is my concern and the guardrails mm-hmm. around it. And I think at the moment, OpenAI might, I don't think we're as close as people think we are with AGI, I think.
Right. What is AGI?
Artificial General Intelligence.
Right. Fezzi, do you want to explain the difference?
So we have lots of intelligence systems that are quite good at doing one thing. Artificial general intelligence is much more human-like in that just as a human can turn its mind to, you know, in one moment be playing chess, another minute doing the shopping list, and another moment doing the washing up. It's a wide range of capabilities that are demonstrated at human level. So it becomes a multi-purpose replacement for the human brain, essentially.
Thank you very much, Uma. Let's squeeze in Matt in High Wycombe. Hello, Matt.
Hiya.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. Just picking up on what Fedson just said with the last call. He said about how AI is advancing quicker than the human brain, and he thinks it's going to be more powerful. But the average human, well, all humans only use between 7% and 10% of their brain. So if we could use AI to unlock the 90%, perhaps eventually we could actually beat AI. But that was not the reason I was phoning. The reason I was phoning is, as we know, very, very shortly, AI is going to answer everything. It'll be able to solve all the problems that possibly are coming up. It's going to do lots of jobs. So we know what's coming down the track. Now, you then factor in the fact that governments all around the world spend hundreds of billions on education, sending us to school, college, university, etc. Are governments sooner or later going to think, well, hold on, why are we wasting this money? We've got AI. Mm. We don't need to send people to school anymore. We don't need to educate them. So then you're in a situation where you have billions of uneducated people, possibly, right? So okay. What happened? So what's one of Trump's most famous quotes? I love the poorly educated. Yeah?
Yes.
It makes us very vulnerable. It makes us very susceptible to being manipulated, especially then if you take the AI away from the people that haven't then been educated. Could it hypothetically lead to a George Orwell 1984 dystopian future where you've got a few people who have been educated, because private schools will still exist, they've got AI, and the rest of us, you know, because governments have saved all the money sending us to giving us education, you'd end up in a very, very dystopian future. Is that something that, you know, is possible? Would that be being guarded against?
So there's a lot of really interesting points there. I think whether or not we are educated, there is a danger that humans get infantilized, you know, that we become childlike against these technologies because we ask it for its advice at every turn. We don't make decisions for ourselves. I see it a bit like, do you remember H.G. Wells' Time Machine when you had the Eloi that lived above the ground and they were these childlike, innocent people who were actually preyed upon by the Morlocks beneath the ground? It's a bit like that. One thing I would say is I think that, and this is, yeah, obviously science fiction at the moment, but there's a lot of work being done on something called brain-computer interfaces. One of Elon Musk's companies and other companies do this. So the ability for AI to interface with the human brain with a two-way flow of information. And if that were to be advanced or perfected, it would be possible to augment our brains with AI brains. And then we'd be a bit like Joe 90, where you'd just be able to download a specific skill set into your brain. And this, you know, this idea of having to be educated over more than a decade would go away. But that wouldn't mean that we would be ignorant. It just means that we would have acquired our knowledge in a different way. And some people think that linkage between humans and AIs is maybe the best chance that humans have a chance to survive this process. But the difficulty with that is, of course, how much of a human do you change before the human ceases to be a human anymore?
What a thought. Matt, thank you very much. I'm going to finish up with a couple of more comments. This one's from Jason in Orpington, who says, hi, Clive. AI isn't just taking jobs, it's changing what a job even means. We're heading for a point where machines can do almost everything faster and cheaper. Universal income won't be a radical idea then, it'll just be basic survival policy. The real challenge isn't stopping AI, it's making sure its benefits are shared and not hoarded. And Andrea says, as a researcher of over 30 years, the cornerstones of my social research are those human skills that AI struggles with, such as empathy, ethics, consent, GDPR, emotional intelligence, active listening, seeing the bigger picture, and interpreting social contexts and inequalities. AI hallucinations and biases add too many dangers for policy, services, and governments for me, says Andrea. And Andrea, I think, is going to get the last word there because we're just about out of time. Fevzi, thank you so much indeed for joining us. Great to have you with us. And you can find out more at gadgetdetective.com. I'm sure we'll talk to you again very soon. Thanks, Fevzi.